Marriage Today presents The Win-Win Marriage by Jimmy Evans.
Let me start with the second step. I was talking about marriage takes faith. Every marriage, to get to your promised land, to get to your dream marriage, it takes faith. And the first step of faith, we're going to talk about seven, but the first step is the faith to stay. Is there are giants in the land. There are Jerichos that we've got to deal with, but they're forces that God will take care of if we'll put our faith in Him. The second step to your promised land, to your dream marriage, is the step of faith to surrender to God and to steward our lives as His servants. To surrender and to become a steward of God as His servant. Now, let me say this. You have a dream financially. I know you have a dream financially. It's something every person wants to prosper. Every person has a dream of being financially secure, but not just being financially secure, but of prospering financially. It was one of my great dreams, and Karen and I's dreams, when we got married. The issue is how it's going to get done. Let me tell you a story from what we just read there when the children of Israel came to the promised land. But this is actually from Joshua chapter 7. The second time they all died in the wilderness, except for Joshua and Caleb, and the children of those people. The second time they came in with Joshua, remember they faced Jericho. Jericho was a fortress with tremendous wealth in it. And God told the children of Israel, it's under the ban. When you defeat Jericho, you can't take any silver or gold or anything out of it because it's the first. The first always belongs to God. And so they defeated Jericho. They walked around the walls, you remember, seven times and then seven times on the seventh day and shouted and the walls came down. But there was a man named Achan who stole something. He was a Jew. And the walls came down and they went in and they killed all of the enemy and they took all of the silver and gold that was going to be used later for the temple. But Achan stole some stuff. The next place that they went was a place called Ai, and they fought the inhabitants of Ai for the land. And then when they went up to the battle, and you can understand that God had told them that I'm going to give you this land. And the second place they go up to fight the enemy and they get defeated. The children of Israel are defeated there. And Joshua comes back from this defeat and he is absolutely overwhelmed. And he goes before God and he says, God, you told us you were going to give us this land. Now, we were just defeated. What is this about? God said, somebody stole something from Jericho. One of your people stole something from Jericho. And they went then into a process of finding out that it was Achan, and judgment came upon Achan because he had stole something from Jericho. And understand this is God desires for us to prosper more than we desire to prosper. But God owns everything. We can't own anything. This is something that rocked my world. I had dreams of riches and dreams of wealth and dreams of prosperity. I had no concept that I was a steward and that I was to surrender my life to God. Psalm 24:1 says, "The earth is the Lord's and all of its fullness, the world and those who dwell therein." The earth is the Lord's. You can't take anything with you. That you've got yourself, you don't even own yourself. The Bible says we've been bought with a price. We don't own our children. We don't own our property. The craziest thing in the world is to believe that we own something. You know, Billy Graham says he's never seen a hearse pulling a U-Haul. You can't take it with you. Is that you're going to die one day. We're all going to die. And we can't take it with us, but we can send it on ahead. Really, that's the truth. We're not owners. We're stewards. And today, Karen and I are living our dream. I mean, we really are. We're prosperous. We're living our dream. Now, when we got married, we were broke. I worked at Scrub It Up Car Wash. That was my first job when we got married. I mean, I made $1.60 an hour. And the reason I got paid $1.60 an hour is that was minimum wage. And that's what they thought of me. They weren't paying me one more nickel than they had to. And I worked at Scrub A Dub Car Wash. Now, when I wasn't working at Scrub It Up, I hauled hay or I plowed or something like that. Karen worked at the Bank of the Southwest. And she made $225 a month. That was our combined income. And I'm telling you, we lived hand to mouth. We were broke. And then we started having kids. And I was in college. I mean to tell you, we struggled, but we dreamed of having more than that. Now I'm saying, this is 35 years later, so I'm saying we're prosperous. God has blessed us. We're not rich, but we're prosperous. And we're things that we dreamed of years ago, we live today. And today we give well over 10% of our income. We give 10% to the church, and we give to many other ministries, including Marriage Today. And that was part of our dream, is to give money away. We also pray. Karen and I never make a decision, any significant decision in our lives, without prayer. Any car that we buy, any house that we buy, anything that we spend money on, any significant investment or anything, we pray about everything because we don't, it's God's. We take care of God's stuff. It's not ours, it's God's. And I'm saying we're very prosperous, but that's not the way it started. At 19 years old, when we got saved, the first thing that happened to me was I got saved and I committed my life to Christ. And at 19 years old, we'd been married 2 weeks. I got saved a week before we got married. A week after we got married, I was sitting in the backyard of our house, 19 years old. I was going to Amarillo College. And it was like a sheet dropped down in front of me. I was reading a book on angels. I think it was about angels by Billy Graham. But I was sitting there and literally a sheet dropped down in front of my eyes. And I saw myself preaching to a multitude of people. I had a pack of Marlboros here and my hair was down to here. And I'd only stopped cussing like 3 or 4 days before that. And I thought I was the Pope because I didn't cuss anymore. But I'm serious, I was awful. But so I mean, God called me to the ministry. Now I'm talking about fear versus faith. I was the class clown. I never, ever had a shy moment in my life. I was just waiting for the world to shut up so I could talk. That was my philosophy. I was the class clown. I got so many swats when I was growing up. I was ADD and the class clown and all that stuff. I'm telling you, I got in so much trouble in school. I lived. There were 770 in my graduating class. Karen and I's graduating class, Tascosa High School, 1972, 770. I don't know where I was, but I can promise you it was hundreds down. I never threatened anywhere close to the top. And I got saved, and the next week, the Lord called me to the ministry. It terrified me. Now, you would think when the call comes that all of a sudden I would have this great courage to preach. It was the exact opposite. When the Lord showed me that I would be preaching to a multitude, I couldn't talk to 3 or 4 people without hyperventilating. I remember the first time it happened. The Lord called me to the ministry, and I was always just very gregarious and outgoing, and it was a week or two later, and I was sitting there talking to a couple of people, and like another person walked up, and I couldn't talk. I started hyperventilating. And every time I'd watch a preacher on TV, I'd start shaking. I'd just literally sit there and shake because I knew I was going to do that one day. I mean, I just never thought of myself in that way. And Karen, I told Karen that, you know, I believe the Lord's called me to preach. And the Lord, I did not go to seminary. The Lord didn't lead me that way. I went into the appliance business with my family. And the Lord brought me into ministry a completely different way. And I remember telling Karen, I believe the Lord's called me to preach. And she said, that's great. Whatever you do, I'll support. And of course, the Lord had called her too. And we started walking the path of surrendering our lives to the Lord and started walking that path. And I'm going to say this now. I lived in fear. And I knew the Lord had called me. And I know that, you know, God, only by God's grace I overcome fear. The first time I ever preached was in Borger, Texas. And a friend had a church over there, and he came to our life group. We had a Bible study in our home that our church had said, you know, if you want to lead a Bible study, do this. I was so terrified the week before that Bible study, I couldn't sleep for a week. I was so terrified of teaching that Bible study. And when the people came in, about 14 people came to that first Bible study, I read off a piece of paper. I was so afraid. I thought I was going to pass out. And when the first person left that Bible study that night, they walked out the door, looked me in the eye, and said, "You can't teach." That helps your confidence. Let me say right, that helps your confidence right there now. You can't teach. I thought, oh my gosh, this is what I have been having nightmares about for a week. But I did it again. And then I did it again, and I did it again. I got pretty good at it. And after 3 years of that, this guy that was in our life group told a church friend of his in Borger, a pastor friend, that I could preach. I'd never preached in my life. And this guy called me up in Borger and said, "Would you like to come over here and preach?" And I said, "Huh?" He said, "Well, this guy told me you could preach." And I said, "Well, I've never preached before." And he said, "Well, I'm going on vacation. Would you come preach for me?" I thought, this is a brave human being. So I got my first message together. Couldn't sleep for a week, hyperventilated, just terrified, terrified. And so finally, I went over there and preached. And I'm serious. I thought I was going to black out. I was so afraid. I grabbed both sides of the pulpit and screamed for an hour. I don't even remember what I said. I just was terrified. I was young and afraid, and I preached. And then ultimately came on staff at the church here to be a marriage counselor because we'd helped a lot of people in their marriages in our life group. Came on as a marriage counselor. And then they asked me to preach at the church. There were about, 1,000 people at the church at that time. Absolutely, totally terrified me. Every time I got up in front of people to speak. But what happened is I never gave up. I just made my mind up that God called me to preach. I won't give up. I'm not the smartest, I know that. I'm not the best looking. I'm not the brightest. I will never give up. And fear will never tell me what I can do or what I cannot do. When God says it, that's it.
Yes.
I'm going to tell you something. God has a call on your life. And you typically know where your call is because that's where your giant is. And that giant says, you're not getting there. I know what your dream is. I know what you think you can do. You're not going to do it. I'm keeping you out. God puts a call on your life, and the misconception is that, yeah, where God calls me to do it, it's going to be easy. No, you're going to have to face giants. And I'm standing here tonight, and I'm saying I'm not nervous about speaking tonight because I've done this a lot. I've stood in front of a lot of people a lot, but there are still issues that I have to face of, larger crowds or national television or things like that. There are always issues there. The fear that's there that's telling me where to stop. I won't stop until I've done everything God's called me to do. Your promised land isn't just your dream. It's God's dream. It's why He created you in your mother's womb, and He created you for something great. And you don't live to do what you want to do. You live to fulfill that dream first. And when you get to His promised land, it will fulfill everything in you. Every desire. I used to think to myself, because I'm ADD, I don't like to sit in an office all day. I know some people love that. I can't do that. If you put me in prison, just put me in a room all day. That's why I was such a horrible student. Someone said to me in my presence last week, I just wish I could go to school for the rest of my life. I thought, oh my gosh. I hate that. But you know what I love to do? I love to sit by myself all day reading or studying, like marriage or something like that. I'm fascinated by it. Every desire I've ever had is fulfilled doing what I do right now. And yours will be too, but I faced a lot of fear to get here. At 21 years old, a couple of years after I got saved, and I was dealing with the issue of being called and just facing the fear of speaking in front of people, We made $7,000 that year, and Karen had gone to church, and some preacher had preached on giving, and she came home and wanted to give $40. When you make $7,000 a year, $40 is a lot of money. And we were always broke. We never had enough money in the bank. Well, float was the only way that we survived, is being able to write checks and then not get to the bank. And we had a lot of fights about money. We were just always living on the edge. And Karen came home and she said, Jimmy, I'd like to give $40 to the church. And let me tell you. I mean, I hated it. I couldn't believe she was doing this. But I was a kid, and we went to a church, and they sent people to your house every year to get money from you. And they knocked on your door, and they came in and said, hey, you're a member of the church, you ought to be giving. Really uncomfortable. And so they knocked on our door one day, and this is a bad story, but it's kind of what I thought about giving. My dad was sitting, this was a Sunday afternoon, and my dad was sitting in the den of our house. My mother was ironing. And my mother turned to my dad and said, would you like me to iron those pants you have on? My dad said, sure, took his pants off. These guys knock on the door. And they're from the church. And they said, and I answer the door. And they said, are your mom and dad here? And I said, sure, come on in. They walk in, my dad's in his underwear. And my mom is ironing, they were just all real embarrassed. And I remember they sat down and started talking to my dad about giving. And I just, it was so awkward. It was just totally awkward. That was my concept of church and giving. It's so awkward. Why are you asking us for this? We don't have any money. I grew up, my parents weren't broke, dirt broke or poverty stricken, but we didn't have any money. And the church came into our house asking for money. She's like, that's crazy, you know. And when Karen wanted to give $40 to the church, I thought, that's crazy, Karen. We don't have any money. You know, and they're talking about all their needs. I'm a lot more heartbroken over mine, you know. And then she watched TV one day about these hungry kids. And she started sending money to World Vision. She sponsored a child. And I'm thinking, that's crazy. You know, I feel sorry for those people, but let somebody rich take care of them. We don't have to take care of them. You know, I mean, I hated it. And she made me so nervous. And she started giving money away. But the only problem was God started doing miracles for us. I mean, I didn't have any faith whatsoever. I just hated it. And, but I could see the difference in our finances. And every time she gave and God did something, she'd come back and say, can I give another $40? It's like, okay, don't push the envelope, baby. Come on, we made it. You know, we didn't go broke over that last crazy thing you did. Don't do it again. Don't do it again. She kept doing it. Well, then we started tithing. We started giving 10% of our income. And I'm telling you, when we started doing that, I just thought, I am the most spiritual human being that ever drew a breath. I did her income tax, we'd given 10% away. And today we give much more than that. But we literally, through the years as we have given, every step has been just a new experience in God's blessing. We walked down this aisle right here. And right there, gave everything we had. It was an offering for a building. And we prayed about it. And we said, Lord, what do you want us to do? And he said, give everything you have. And he spoke at first to me, individually as we prayed, and then to Karen. And Karen walked into me and said, what are we going to give this weekend? And I said, well, I think the Lord told me to give everything we had. She said, that's what he told me. We took all of our savings, all of our checking, all of our stocks, everything we had, not our house, not our cars, but just every liquid asset that we had. And we walked down this aisle right there and gave everything we had. The amount that we gave is a fraction today of what we have. And about 2 months after giving that, we found out that we were getting the house of our dreams for free. And I tell people this, our testimony is so good that it's offensive. I can't even tell people our testimony. Because it offends people. But all I'm telling you is this. That's how we got here. Karen's mom and dad, when I met Karen, of course I thought they were rich because, you know, based on compared to our family, I mean, they were rolling in it. And that helped me make up my mind about getting married to her. Not really. But I didn't know it, but when we were dating, when we get married, her parents were struggling financially a lot. Southwest Airlines flew from here to Dallas. Karen's dad was trying to move his business to Dallas, and the airfare for an airline ticket from here to Dallas was $19. Anybody remember that? Southwest Airlines, $19. That was in 1960s, early 70s. He struggled to pay $19 a week to go to Dallas. To start a new business. He was an insurance man starting a business. They'd gotten saved about the same time we did. And they hated me. They brought guys over to meet Karen while I was there. And that's the truth. That's the truth. That's the true story. They had a whole Bible study praying that we wouldn't get married. Listen, when we have our banquets now to raise money for marriage today, I look out there and see people that used to be praying we wouldn't get married. I mean, they promise. And they'll come up to me and say, boy, we were praying y'all wouldn't get married, but you know, look what God did. So, don't ever ask them to pray for anything, I can tell you that right now. They, like God listened to them. But Karen's parents hated me, and the feeling was mutual. Seriously, we couldn't stand. We both got saved the same time, so we didn't care. And I just gotten saved, and Karen's dad had just gotten saved, and when he got saved, when he was struggling, he told the Lord, he said, you bless me, and I'll give you half of everything I make. And he meant it. And he wasn't meaning someday, he meant right then. Now, Karen's folks are in the top wealthiest people. I mean, they're just at the top of wealth, worth a lot of money, millions and millions and millions of dollars, and their friends are also. And God only knows how many millions of dollars they've given away. Over the little plaque on their front door in North Dallas, "Choose you this day who you will serve. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Margaret Thatcher has been in that house. Presidents, I mean, all kinds of people have been in that house, that they have hosted the wealthiest people in the world, most powerful people in the world, in that house, and they truly believe that God gave them everything they had for the purpose of the kingdom. They're the most kingdom-minded people you've ever met in your life. Karen's mom lost her arm and leg when she was a little girl. She's a beautiful, very beautiful woman. You'd never know in a million years that she's never, ever, ever felt sorry for herself. But I remember when they went down to Guatemala and they put, they paid for, I think it was either 300 or 400 prostheses for children down there who had lost limbs. That's just the kind of people they are. But it all started with Karen's dad, Bud, when he first got saved. And he said, "Lord, if you'll bless me, I'll give it away." Not only have they given it away, what they've kept, they could never spend in the rest of their life. We don't own things. We steward things. Here's what Proverbs 10:22 says. "It's the blessing of the Lord that makes one rich, and he adds no sorrow with it." You have a dream, and God knows that dream, and God wants you to be wealthy. But understand this. He adds no sorrow with it. You don't lose your marriage. You don't lose your health. You don't lose your reputation. You don't lose your children. It doesn't cost you. When you do it God's way, it's blessed. And what the devil says is, someday serve God, but right now you need to get out and make all this money and get rich and then give it to the church. No, no, no. It'll break your heart. You never get there. The devil's a liar. What God says is, give it to me right now. In the day of small beginnings, give it to me right now. And you have, you know, you make $7,000 a year. Don't feel sorry for yourself. You sow. You begin right where you are right now and you sow. Yonggi Cho, the pastor of the world's largest church, 700,000 people, started with 300 peasants. They didn't have money. They had pigs and chickens and corn and things like that. And the Lord told him one day to tell his congregation to begin to give. He said, "Lord, I can't do that." And he says, "You tell them to give." And out of that original 300 peasants, there are now millionaires. And people that God lifted out of poverty because they began to give. And this is a giant that you're going to have to face. Because when you're sitting there writing that check, when we stood down here and gave everything that we had, don't you ever think that it was a joyful event? We brought the Bible says the Lord loves a hilarious giver. I don't know if he loved us that night. But I'll tell you this, we were obedient. But boy, were we joyous several months later. Don't you let that demon of fear lie to you and tell you that there's another way other than God's way. You come to God and you lay your life down and say, "This is your life, God. Use it for your glory. And everything I have, I dedicate it to you." And the first always belongs to God. The first day of the week, the first 10% of what you get, the first time of your day, everything belongs to God. And when God gets the first, everything else is blessed. And 90% blessed is much more than 100% cursed. He says, if you'll stop robbing me and you'll give me the first, I'll rebuke the devourer and I'll open the windows of heaven and pour out a blessing that you cannot receive. I promise God will do that for you. I promise. It's the second step of reaching your dream marriage, and that is you surrender everything to the Lord and yourself as His servant, and you steward your life. And I promise you now, God will bless you. Number three, and I'll finish with this one this evening. Number three step is serving each other and sowing into each other's lives as couples, serving each other. And here's how the dream of marriage is realized. The first thing we do is submit our lives to God and say, "God, I'm your steward." Number two is we submit to one another. And this is what Ephesians 21 says. You know, it says, "Wives, submit to your husbands." The verse before that says, "Submitting to one another in the fear of God. That's Ephesians 5:21 that goes into the rest of the text there about marriage. Submitting to one another in the fear of God. Let me say this. Every man can make his wife's dream come true. And every woman can make her husband's dream come true. But we can't make our own dream come true. The secret to reaching our dream marriage is for us to love one another and to meet each other's needs and to sow into each other's lives. The third issue is submitting our dreams and desires to God and believing as we sow into God and our spouse that our dream will be fulfilled. This is Luke 6:38. Given it will be given to you, good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, it will be put into your bosom, for with the same measure that you use, it will be measured back to you in return. I want to tell you about a principle here tonight. It's called the third dream principle. The only way you get to your dream marriage and your promised land is when your dream is third. God's dream is first, my spouse's dream is second, and my dream is third. The first reason that I live is to fulfill God's dream for my life that He created me in my mother's womb for, which will maximize every desire and gifting in my life. It will help me to fulfill His will for my life, and it will make me a steward of God. It will bless me more than anything else. Number two, I am my spouse's dream maker. They can't make their dream come true. If they would, they wouldn't have gotten married. If I'm going to meet their dream. And here's the problem with it. It's fear. The fear that if we serve our spouse and we make our lives about them, we'll be taken advantage of. This is what I thought. And our dream won't come true. If I don't take care of my dream, it won't come true. And what happens is a battle of dreams. Is that your marriage just literally becomes a battle of dreams. This is what many marriages are. This is what our marriage was in the beginning. We were both battling to see whose dream was going to be fulfilled. And let me tell you what my dream was. And I remember this very, very vividly when I was 19, 20, 21 years old, in spite of the fact that the Lord had called me to ministry, this truly was my dream. Number one was to be rich. I grew up, I wanted to be rich. I looked at rich people and I just thought they don't have any problems and I want to be like them. I want money, number one. Number two, I wanted to be a professional golfer. I really did. And I was a pretty decent golfer, and I played a lot. This was an issue that I hung up my golf clubs and it saved our marriage, because when if I wasn't working, I was golfing. And I was a good enough golfer where I could golf well. And I had a lot of fun golfing. And I just thought, well, if I get good enough now one of these days, I mean, I can, you know, become a professional golfer, at least a full-time golfer. And number three is I wanted to come home to a Christian Stepford wife. And I wanted this glassy-eyed little doll that I could come home to every night. She never complained. She just couldn't wait for me to come home. I mean, she was excited about it, that she served me, that she was submitted and serving and sexual. And that was my dream. Now, she wasn't going for it. But that was my dream. So let me ask you some questions about your dream. Now, I don't know if you know what your dream is. I don't know if you've ever thought about it. But honestly, that was my dream. I wanted to be rich. I wanted to be a golfer. And I wanted a Stepford wife. Here's some questions to qualify our dreams. Number one, is my dream submitted to God and scriptural? Is my dream scriptural? My dream was not scriptural. My dream for my life at that point wasn't God's dream for my life. And it just didn't fit with reality. The number two question to qualify our dream is, does it include my spouse's dream? Because a promised land without my spouse's dream is not the promised land. Let me tell you about some other research that's been done. This is the University of Washington, and they study marriage a lot there, done some of the most important study. They find that the worst fights are on a dream level. The worst fights of marriage are on a dream level. Because you're violating my dream. In other words, like money is an example. I'm not just frustrated with you because you're spending too much money. I'm frustrated with you because I've always dreamed of financial security. You're messing with my dream. I'm not just frustrated with you because you're a slob. And you never pick up after yourself and you don't take responsibility for anything around the house. I'm frustrated because I've always had the dream of having an orderly house. I'm not just frustrated because you work late a lot. I'm frustrated because I've always dreamed of having children with an attentive father. I'm not just frustrated because you won't do this and this and this. You're my dream breaker. And that's why I'm so angry. We fight around our fears, but it's based on our dreams. My fear is poverty. My fear is loneliness. My fear is a dysfunctional family. My fear is being like my parents. My fear is this. And so when you touch my fear, you're threatening my dream, and that's why we fight. We fight around that. That's what they have found in research. And they've also found that dominance destroys the intimacy and goodwill of a marriage. In other words, when one person is dominating the marriage, it means that one person's dream is the only dream that matters. And we have the resource that's called the Mountaintop of Marriage that we encourage people to get. And you take a vision retreat every year. And you go away for 3 or 4 days and you spend half the day praying and talking about your marriage and submitting it to God, but also talking about every area of your marriage and what's going to happen. And the brilliance of having that type of an event every year is you know God's dream and each other's dream. It's not just about you. You know God's dream and each other's dream. Is my dream godly? Is God ever going to bless my dream? Number one. Number two, does it include my spouse's dream? And number three, how am I going to get my dream fulfilled? How is my dream going to come true? Number one is by force. I mean, this is what I tried to do, is to shame and bully Karen into fulfilling my dream. And when I came home from playing golf and she was tired and complaining about what I was doing, I was dominant and verbally abusive, and I thought, I'm going to force her. You know, it's just hard. It's hard to force a person into fulfilling your dream. It just doesn't work that way. The second is by fear. And that is, I'm not going to do the right thing till you do the right thing. Now, the fear is, if I begin by serving you and becoming your dream maker, then you're going to take advantage of me. Okay, and again, it's not faith, it's fear. Given, it will be given to you. That's not, money is not the topic of Luke 6. It's love, about loving our enemies and blessing those who curse us and praying for those who spitefully use us. Give, and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over. Men will pour it back into your lap. And so the issue of fear is, I fear if I surrender to you and serve you, you'll take advantage of me. Well, it doesn't mean that we don't talk about our needs, or we don't stand up for ourselves, or we've just become a passive target for abuse, but it just means I'm going to have to do the right thing even if you're not. In fact, if our marriage is bad, the only way to make it good is for one of us to do the right thing. And you say, well, my marriage is terrible, there's nothing I can do about it. Let me tell you this, when you change, your marriage changes. And when you change for the better, your marriage changes for the better. And a lot of people are in a standoff. They're having a dream battle, and neither one of them will flinch because both of them are guided by fear and stubbornness, and they're just locked down. And the way that a marriage turns good is by this, is for one person to walk up and say, I'm your dream maker. You know, we've been battling a lot about who's going to win here. Now, it has to be a right dream. I'm saying, you know, not just every dream, but I'm saying your spouse has needs. That's part of their dream. Every woman dreams of security. Every woman dreams of security. It's an integral part of who she is as a person. She dreams of relationship. She dreams of her emotional needs getting met. She dreams of family, and those things are critical. Every man dreams of respect. Every man dreams of being the world's greatest man. Every man dreams of sex. It's a part of a man's dream. And you can make that dream come true for your spouse. You say, well, they're not meeting my needs. Given, it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over. Men will pour it back into your lap. You can try to get your dreams fulfilled by force or by fear. It just never works, but you can do it by faith. And let me read you this letter, and I'll close with this. This is a letter from a woman that I know, and I've known this woman for quite a while. And this is her letter about her marriage and how it turned around. She said, Dear Jimmy, my husband has gone through a very difficult time for the past 3 years. Due to hurts that he has experienced from people in almost every area of his life. And over a period of time, the enemy managed to pile one on top of another, causing great emotional trauma and a lot of anger. During this time, our relationship became strained, and I became the enemy along with almost every other person in his life. Nothing I did was acceptable to him because the enemy had been so successful in inflicting deep wounds. One day, the Lord spoke to me very clearly and told me that the only open door to His Spirit was through sex. He said that I needed to be very careful to keep the door open. My husband wasn't particularly appealing to me at that time because the anger infected every word, facial expression, etc. And I was well aware of his feelings toward me. Still, the Lord's words rang in my spirit. I knew that it was a strong warning to me, and I knew if I weren't obedient, there would be devastating consequences that cannot be undone. As a result, God has done the miraculous in our lives, and He has been faithful in our marriage to go beyond restoration. I can't adequately describe the strength in our relationship. It is simply amazing. As a side note, there is still a healing in another relationship that needs to take place, but I know it will. I take no credit for this. It was only by the goodness and grace of God that I was able to hear the warning and heed it. I know this is a powerful key in the spirit realm with profound ramifications. God's plan for marriage is the only win-win-win deal. Every other plan for marriage, somebody loses, somebody's taken advantage of. But God's plan for marriage is this. God gets His dream fulfilled, your spouse gets their dream fulfilled, and you get your dream fulfilled. It's a win-win-win deal. But ours is the third dream. We begin by saying to God, I surrender to Your will for my life. It's Your blessing that is going to make me rich and prosperous. You made me in my mother's womb. I can't own anything. I can't take anything with me for the rest of my life. I am going to be here to serve You and to steward the assets that You put in my possession. And I'm thankful for all the benefit and enjoyment I get out of those. But Lord, first of all, they're for You. Number two, I'm Your dream maker. I'm Your dream maker. I'm Karen's dream maker. She's my dream maker. I used to be her dream breaker. But now I'm her dream maker. Her needs are more important than mine, and I will hurt myself to meet her needs. She'll never have to nag me or beg me the way she once did. I will never again demean her for her needs. But for the rest of my life, I live to make her the happiest woman on earth. I won't do anything for her that's not good for her. But I will do everything for her that blesses her and makes her dreams come true. She does the same for me. We live with our dream makers. That's your dream marriage. But you can't get there by fear. When you come to the area of stewardship, that giant will stand over you and mock you and tell you if you give money away, you're going to go broke and God won't come through for you and all these things. When you come to serving your spouse and humbling yourself, he will stand there and tell you you're going to be taken advantage of, you're going to be dominated, you're going to be stupid, all the guys are going to make fun of you and call you a sissy, you know, and henpecked and all that stuff. And if you're a woman, they're going to say that, you know, you're one of those stupid Christian submitted women and you're just crazy and you don't know what you're doing. Okay. But if you'll notice, those people are miserable. Did you ever notice that? But you can have your dream marriage. But it's all always by faith. You take the step of staying. I'm in this thing for keeps. No devil's going to run me off. We're going to have face giants, but we're going to overcome them by the power of God. And I surrender my life. We surrender our marriage to God, and we're stewards, and we're going to give, and we're going to give Him the best of everything and the first of everything that we have. And number three, we're going to serve each other and to sow into each other's lives. Before my dream, your dream. I want my dream to be fulfilled. But I'm going to give and believe that it will be given back to me. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over. That you'll pour it back into my lap because I've sown it into your life. You can have your dream marriage.
This concludes session two. Please continue with The Power of Words, the next teaching in this series.